Crusade Channel News. News you can trust, because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood, coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Friday, November 3rd, 2017. President Trump begins his Asia trip today, and the October jobs report has been released, as has the new iPhone X. Today we honor a South American saint. A sentence has been delivered in the trial of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, and interim Democratic National Committee Chair Donna Brazile has blown the lid off the DNC and the 2016 primary. President Trump is en route to Hawaii at the start of a 12-day, five-nation tour of Asia today, his first official trip to the region. He will be attending two summits and meeting with the leaders of Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam, and the Philippines, and the topic of North Korea will undoubtedly be the central focus of those meetings. Here is AP's Asia-Pacific News Director Ted Anthony with more.
U.S. President Donald Trump comes to Asia with lots on his plate and one big issue hanging over his head: the tension between the United States and a nuclear-armed North Korea. Trump's first swing to Asia as president includes opportunities to talk trade and security at regional summit meetings and to put his heads together with some of Asia's major figures. These include South Korea's Moon Jae-in, Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines, and Shinzo Abe of Japan, who has courted Trump in particular. But the big meeting will be with Xi Jinping, the leader of China, who's freshly strengthened after a recent Communist Party Congress meeting. Xi and Trump have lots to talk about, but two issues top the agenda. The first is trade. The United States wants much more access to China's markets and to rectify a trade imbalance. The second, of course, is North Korea and how muscular Beijing is going to be in its dealings with Pyongyang over the nuclear issue. From there, Trump goes to Southeast Asia for ASEAN and APEC meetings, where he'll get a chance to meet with leaders individually and hopefully a bit more candidly. At the same time, he'll be looking at Asia-Pacific as a regional economic bloc and as a whole rather than just as individual nations. As Asia prepares for a Trump-filled week, there are some questions that people are asking, including these. What relationships will he strengthen? Will he damage any? What role will the North Korea issue play across the entire trip? And finally, the question that everyone is wondering about most of all, which is, what could Donald Trump do while he's here that no one is expecting? Ted Anthony, The Associated Press, Bangkok.
And now it's time for your business and market report. The jobs report has come out and the news is positive. The Wall Street Journal reports that unemployment has fallen to 4.1%, the lowest level since December 2000, and non-farm payrolls rose a seasonally adjusted 261,000. The previous jobs report had reflected a market slump due to the effects of Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria, but the market has apparently rebounded from that setback. Wage increases were unimpressive. Revisions of September's payrolls data, which initially had been said to have dropped, breaking a 7-year streak of job gains, now show that 18,000 jobs were created in September, thereby extending the job gains streak to a record 85 straight months. Mark Zandi, chief economist for Moody's Analytics, opined for CNBC that the job market is red hot and that big deficit-financed tax cuts, such as those proposed by the House Ways and Means Committee, would have the effect of throwing gasoline on top of this red-hot job market. He also predicts that the participation in the labor market will begin decreasing again as baby boomers continue retiring en masse. Zandi says that unemployment is predicted to fall through 4% by early next year and that labor shortages are becoming more of an issue for many industries and regions of the country. He predicts that wage growth will grow over 3% by next year, but has a warning for the economy. He says that the benefits of the upcoming tax cuts will be erased by higher interest rates and the nation's debt load will increase because the tax cuts are not paid for. Apple released their iPhone X today, and Reuters reports that despite investors' concerns over production delays, sales are better than expected. Here is Reuters' Laura Freikberg with more.
It sent devout followers of Apple into a frenzy around the world, from China to Australia to Germany. Everyone, it seems, wants a piece of the new iPhone X.
It's like a religion. When it's introduced, it's like being in church on a Sunday morning at 11. People are seated, all curious, and someone talks up front. It's a pattern which by now works fantastically.
The iPhone X may prove to be Apple's holy grail. iPhones accounted for over half of Apple's sales in the fourth quarter, almost $29 billion worth. And this new device is selling well so far, sending the firm closer to hitting its trillion-dollar market value.
The iPhone is clearly still the most important product for Apple. It's the biggest seller, it generates the most revenues, so it's really important for Apple to continue to produce a new device every couple of years.
The fervor over the iPhone X has seen some spot an opportunity, buying multiple devices and on selling them for double the price. But money for some of the devout is no object.
The iPhone is a big part of my life. You know, I love using it. I love how simple it is. I love the way it works. I would never want to go to anything more complicated or anything like Android, yeah.
Like, I'd say in a way I'm insane. I think it's just the phone. Like, you know, I've had BlackBerries in the past, I've had Androids in the past, and then when I compare them to an iPhone, the iPhone always trumps it just because it's fast, I prefer the software. I have Apple products at home, so it will, like, connect together.
In Japan, some waited almost a week in the cold to be the first to buy the new device. Traders celebrating the worldwide euphoria, net income rose to just over $2 a share, beating estimates of under $190.
Alrighty then. Now let's see how the stock market is performing today. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 81 points, and in early afternoon trading is up 31 points at 23,547. The NASDAQ yesterday closed down 2 points and in early afternoon trading was up 29 points at 6,744. The S&P 500 yesterday closed up half a point and in early afternoon trading was up 5 points at 2,585. Crude oil was up 19 cents at $54.73 a barrel. In the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed up 120 points and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed up 85. The London FTSE 100 closed up 6 and the DAX in Germany closed up 39. Today's quote of the day comes from St. Martin de Porres. Compassion is preferable to cleanliness. With a little bit of soap, I can clean my bed, but think of the flood of tears I would require to clean from my soul the stain that harshness against this unfortunate would leave. Coming up next after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor St. Martin de Porres. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, when I was a kid, being called a bookworm was an insult of the highest order. Today, people want to be called bookworm to solve the world's political problems. At the Founders Trading Post, we have the books you need to help solve the world's problems and save your soul, too. From Humility of Heart to Patrick Henry, American Statesman, get started on your bookworm bona fides today by browsing to mikechurch.com/books. Most of our books are also signed by the authors. Shop like a Jeopardy champion today at mikechurch.com.
Juan Martin de Porres Velasquez was born in 1579 in Lima, Peru, the illegitimate son of a Spanish nobleman and a freed slave. Abandoned by his mother entrusted him to a primary school, and then he apprenticed with a barber surgeon to learn the medical arts. By law, he, as a man of African or Native American descent, could not become a full member of a religious order, but he was permitted at 15 to enter the Dominican Convent of the Rosary as a servant boy. At 24, after 8 years of doing laundry, kitchen work, cleaning, and practicing the medical arts, he was permitted by his prior to take vows as a Third Order Dominican. At 34, Martin received the religious habit of a lay brother and was selected to minister to the brothers in the infirmary. Martin was a vegetarian who fed about 160 poor people daily and was given the gift of healing and ecstatic levitation. Miracles of healing continued after his death in 1639, and his body was said to be incorrupt. St. Martin de Porres, pray for us. CNN is reporting that a decision has been reached in the sentencing phase of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl's military trial. Sergeant Bergdahl has pled guilty to charges of desertion and misbehavior before the enemy stemming from an incident in 2009 in which he left his outpost in Afghanistan and was captured by the Taliban. The prosecution had asked for a 14-year prison sentence for Bergdahl, who could have been given up to life in prison. The defense asked for a punishment of a dishonorable discharge. CNN reports that military judge Army Colonel Jeffrey Nance has sentenced Sergeant Bergdahl with a reduction of rank to private, a dishonorable discharge, and the payment of roughly $10,000 in fines. The Daily Caller reports that interim Democratic National Committee Chair Donna Brazile has levied the blame for the DNC's financial problems on former President Barack Obama and Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Brazile said that President Obama, quote, left the party $24 million in debt and blames Wasserman Schultz for failing to reduce DNC staff during non-election years. Brazile, upon assumption of her position as interim chair, vowed to get to the bottom of the allegations that the 2016 Democratic presidential primary was rigged in favor of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton over Senator Bernie Sanders. In the process of her investigation, she discovered that former DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz was a poor manager and allowed the Hillary Clinton campaign to take the reins of control at the DNC in exchange for a monthly allowance that would pay the operating costs of the organization. Here is Jen Kearns, contributor to The Hill and The Washington Examiner, on Fox News this morning with her assessment of the significance of Brazile's claims.
Donna Brazile dropping a major bombshell yesterday on the Democratic Party's alliance with Hillary Clinton. In an excerpt from her new book called Hacks, which will soon come out, Brazile writes, "I had promised Bernie when I took the helm of the Democratic National Committee after the convention that I would get to the bottom of whether Hillary Clinton's team had rigged the nomination process, which a lot of people had suspected at the time. As Hillary's campaign gained momentum, she resolved the party's debt. It had become dependent on her campaign for survival by September 7th, the day I called Bernie. I had found my proof, and it broke my heart." That is a major statement. Here now to react is contributor at The Hill and The Washington Examiner, Jen Kearns. This is a huge allegation from the wing woman of Hillary Clinton in a lot of this. I mean, the person that they said gave her the questions from CNN. I mean, they were all in this together, and now here comes this book. What is the allegation that she says Hillary Clinton did here?
Yeah, this is really astonishing, yeah. Rob. And Donna Brazile is really giving us an inside look as to what actually happened. A little play on words with Hillary's book tour. This is really remarkable here. It shows that in August of 2015, almost a full year before Hillary Clinton actually became the nominee.
Way before.
She entered into this agreement, a contract with the DNC to say that that her campaign would control the strategy, the messaging, the funds, and would even, this is what makes me wonder, would even have first right of refusal on who was hired as a communications director at the DNC. Now, I can tell you, I've worked for the largest state party in the nation, the California Republican Party. Yeah. I know how party apparatuses work. I've done work for the RNC. This is highly, highly unusual. You don't get those kind of privileges until you become the nominee. The fact that Hillary Clinton engaged in this contract with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC almost a full year before she became the nominee. It's very troubling.
This is back when Debbie was running the show. And basically, you think that there was just an assumption, hey, I'm doing this thing. This is my turn. I don't care who else runs. This is my show. We're going to do this. And Debbie was just complicit.
Yeah. You know, this really goes to show a couple of things. One, it goes to show how entitled Hillary Clinton was in her presumption that she was going to become the nominee. This is 25 years going of the Clintons feeling entitled to everything on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
And it also shows us that the Democrat Party, once again, is proven to favor elitism and cronyism in their own party. It proves that, you know, when they talk about the big guy versus the little guy, which they so often do.
The party of the people, they claim,
party of the people. Yeah. It turns out they're big hypocrites. And you know why? Because they let party bosses and big money run their own party. And this is why the DNC is having problems with their rank and file. This is why they're having problems with the rest of America, because we see it now.
Yeah. And one last question. Would Bernie have gotten that nomination had this been a fair fight? And how do you think he would have done in the general election?
You know, it's hard to tell how he would have done in the general, but it would have been very interesting to see the populist fight on the left versus the populist fight on the right. This is something that Steve Bannon talked about on his recent 60 Minutes interview. It would have been interesting. If that had been a fair fight, it would have been a much more interesting campaign for the
And even and Trump and Sanders, in a weird way, they connected on a lot of issues.
They
it was
sure
very
did.
Strange, but they were very different and very similar in some ways. This is all very interesting.
Thank you
so much for coming on this morning.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
In this Celestial Musings, Yemen. It shows up in my news feed a lot. They have been fighting a horrendous cholera epidemic. Yemen is the poorest country in the Middle East. So when a headline crossed the Crusade Channel news desk, which said, "Yemen devastation, one of the worst conflicts since World War II," and that assessment is by the Red Cross, I wondered what it was about. It was about a bombing in Yemen by a Saudi-led coalition which killed 26 people. The two-year-long war in Yemen has claimed over 10,000 people. 18.8 million people are in need of humanitarian help, and one child under five dies every 10 minutes. Here is Russia Times with more detail on the situation.
26 people are being killed in an airstrike by the Saudi-led coalition in northern Yemen. I must warn you, you may well find the following images disturbing. The strike hit a hotel and a busy market. According to local media, the area was crowded with civilians. Video shows the market has been completely destroyed. And it's just the latest deadly airstrike carried out by the Saudi-led coalition since 2015. In a statement, the coalition says that it's now conducting a review of its actions. Joint Forces Command also adds that it forces work to the highest measures of targeting. However, since the start of the Saudi intervention, the crisis in Yemen's continued to deteriorate on an almost daily basis. And I'm joined on the line now by Ralph El-Hajj, ICRC regional spokesperson. Ralph, horrible pictures, terrible suffering. The media reporting children have died. What's your organisation's reaction? Do you have any information to add to what we've heard already?
Good evening to you and to your viewers. Indeed, shocking images again and again from Yemen. Unfortunate civilians continue to bear the brunt and pay the price for a war that has wreaked havoc in the country for over 2 years. Unfortunately, airstrikes, shelling, and the war in Yemen continues to kill more and more innocent civilians. Our organization, the International Committee of the Red Cross, continues to monitor the situation and continues to bring humanitarian aid to the victims, especially the civilians. That's what we can do right now. And unfortunately, this isn't the first time that civilians pay the price. Over 10,000 people have already died. More than 2.9 million people have fled their homes because of destruction and because of devastation to the infrastructure in the country. Electrical power plants do not function as normal. More than 90% of the Yemeni people do not have public electricity at the moment. Not to mention access to clean water and, most important of all, access to health care.
I mean, sadly, not enough people, I think, actually see on their TVs what is going on in Yemen. If we compare it to other, you know, disaster areas around the world, how bad is the situation there? I mean, are we talking like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, catastrophe at the moment?
Indeed, Yemen is witnessing one of the worst armed conflicts in the Middle East, if not in the world. Just like Syria and Iraq, the Middle East in itself faces one of the worst catastrophes or armed conflicts since World War II. Millions of civilians have fled. Over 47 million people in the Middle East need humanitarian aid, and humanitarian organizations are just not able to function well with lack of access, lack of being able to deliver what they have been entrusted to do in terms of helping the victims of the armed conflicts.
The country is said to be on the brink of famine. There's an outbreak of cholera, and we've seen the photographs, which are horrendous. How long will it take, if at all, can Yemen return to normal life ever?
For Yemen and the Yemeni people to return to normal life, there has to be some sort of an end to the conflict. Political solutions should be reached. Humanitarian aid and humanitarian work is not a solution. It's just a patch on the wound, and the wounds are increasing. When we talk today about the cholera crisis, more than 850,000 people in Yemen have been affected or are suspected cases with cholera. However, we have seen in the past few days that the cholera crisis is being contained. Less cholera cases are being reported.
And that is at least some good news coming out of the country. We shouldn't forget that this isn't only the problem today in Yemen. We have the port of Hudaydah, which was the main line of commodities, food, fuel, and everything that the people of Yemen need as basic necessities. This port is currently non-functional. Likewise, the Sana'a airport, which is also a main source of travel for the Yemenis and could have saved a lot of lives if it was still functioning, because a lot of Yemenis could have traveled abroad for the necessary healthcare treatment. Today, more than 50% of the health facilities in Yemen do not function. Many people die because they cannot travel, they cannot pay for transport to reach the closest hospital or clinic that is able to treat their cases. Mm-hmm. This is really unfortunate and gives us a picture of a catastrophic situation the Yemeni people unfortunately continue to face day after day.
Ralph, appreciate your thoughts and for coming on RT. Ralph El-Haj, ICRC regional spokesperson.
So that word, coalition, I think it really hides the truth. The U.S.-led coalition in Iraq and Syria, well, it wasn't the U.S. taking the major casualties. It was the Iraqi and Syrian armies. This Saudi-led coalition, the United States is in that. We are materially aiding in the bombing of this poor, starving, crippled by a cholera epidemic nation. Do you think anybody remembers that it was U.S. bombs which were dropped onto a funeral in Yemen a year ago? A funeral, folks. I didn't even remember it. I was reminded as I researched the situation further. This is a fight between two sects of Islam and two nations who hate each other, Iran and Saudi Arabia. Sunni-dominated Saudi Arabia is seeking to restore the Yemeni government, which was taken over by Shiite Houthi rebels, a group Saudi Arabia considers to be a proxy Iranian force. With Shiite Iranian influence already present in the Syrian and Iraqi governments, Saudi Arabia does not want to see another Shiite force on its borders, so the battlefield has now become Yemen, and those poor people are suffering and paying the price. It needs to stop. I wish to extend a great big kudos to U.S. Representatives Ro Khanna of California, Mark Pocan of Washington, and Walter Jones of North Carolina, who are seeking to force a vote over United States involvement in the war in Yemen. In a New York Times op-ed on Tuesday, they illustrated the unconstitutionality of our involvement and likened the conflict to a hypothetical war affecting Washington State with their population of 7.3 million. Quote, on the brink of starvation, with the port city of Seattle under a naval and aerial blockade, leaving it unable to receive and distribute countless tons of food and aid that is waiting offshore. The op-ed continues, this nightmare scenario is akin to the obscene reality occurring in the Middle East's poorest country, Yemen, at the hand of the region's richest, Saudi Arabia, with unyielding support from the U.S. military that Congress has not authorized and therefore violates the Constitution. It's not often that Congress does anything worth applauding, but this certainly deserves acclamation. Thank you, Representatives Khanna, Pocan, and Jones. Send me your news tips at news@veritasradionetwork.com. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network for king-sized truth from radio-sized speakers. Coming up next, The True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel. Serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News. Live on your news, talk, and saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.